Good morning, everyone. Banks in the news this morning. A lot of details, so if you got a pen, write this stuff down. Wells Fargo Bank, it delivered extraordinary results when it reported last week. $3 billion was the amount of money that it made. It sent the stock market reeling upward. Goldman Sachs reported even larger than expected first quarter earnings yesterday, $1.66 billion on Monday. What does this mean for the banks? Have they turned the corner? And in something of an extraordinary prepayment penalty issue, Goldman Sachs reportedly wants to raise $5 billion and maybe pay the federal government back for taking TARP money. But the government says not so fast. You have to get approval for us on all of that. Prepayment penalty because it makes the other banks look bad. What's going on here? Well, of course, James Surowiecki is here to help us out. He writes the blog The Balance Sheet and is a business columnist for The New Yorker. James joins us from New York. Good morning, James.
Thanks for having me on.
Let's talk about the various banks that are reporting. I mean, you've got Wells Fargo with a number that I think a lot of people were surprised by, but Wells Fargo is no Citigroup. And Goldman Sachs, of course, which is always believed to be healthier, with a nice profit number reported yesterday. How are those two banks different from the Citicorps and the Bank Americas of the world?
Well, we're going to find out. Citigroup will be reporting earnings later this week. They'll be reporting on Friday, and J.P. Morgan will be reporting on Thursday. Goldman, I think, has always been seen as different. I mean, in the first place, Goldman's business is just very different. It's not a traditional bank. It's officially now considered a bank holding company because it sort of reclassified itself during the crisis last fall. But it obviously is a very different business in terms of what it does. So that was probably a little bit less of a surprise. And I think the other thing about Goldman is that historically, at least over the course of this crisis and over the housing bubble, it ventured much less into subprime and sort of these, you know, very bad loans that a lot of these banks had. So that was maybe a little bit less of a surprise. Wells Fargo, which technically didn't report last week, it actually pre-announced it. I think it's officially going to release its numbers maybe next week or in a couple of weeks. That was a little more shocking. It basically said that it was going to make about, as you said, about $3 billion. People had, you know, Wells Fargo traditionally had been thought to have a better book. In other words, it had been considered to have made fewer bad loans. Nonetheless, you know, most of its business or a good chunk of its business is in California, which is really the epicenter of the housing bubble. And as a result, you know, people, I think, were expecting pretty dismal numbers. It also had acquired Wachovia last year as part of kind of the breakdown of the banking system. Wells Fargo came in and picked up Wachovia. Wachovia had made a lot of really bad ventures into subprime. So, you know,
well, let me stop you right there on the Wachovia thing, because it seems to me that the Wells Fargo issue is maybe distinct, way distinct from Goldman Sachs, and is possibly indicative of what's going to be happening with some of these other banks. In theory, it looks like Wells Fargo bought Wachovia at a absolute bottom of the market, and things have changed in the last few months. I'm wondering if they're, you know, kind of buying low and selling high at this point. Suddenly, assets that seemed absolutely worthless are now worth something, and it reflects a kind of bounce that is coming off the bottom.
Well, that's kind of the hopeful take on things, the optimistic take. That's probably somewhat close to what I think happened. I mean, what Wells did when they bought Wachovia was they wrote down most of what they bought. So, in other words, they took or accounted for a lot of the losses that they anticipated that Wachovia was going to have on its loans right away. So Wells' numbers last quarter were absolutely, completely dismal. And as you said, there's some sign of it's not exactly health in the housing market, but there's more activity. Obviously, we know that mortgage rates are incredibly low. People are starting to venture back. Housing sales are still down, you know, from where they were, say, a year ago and so on. But quarter over quarter, month over month, you are starting to see maybe slight signs that there's a bottoming. And as a result, I think you're right. You're starting to see that some of those assets that Wells had maybe written down to whatever, zero or 20 cents, are maybe worth slightly more.
Or a lot more.
Yeah. And more importantly, they're doing a lot of new, they said they were doing a lot of new business. The exact numbers are a little foggy, but they said, you know, they might do as much as $190 billion in new mortgages, or that may also include refinances over this quarter, and I think the next one. And The key thing to understand about the banks right now, it's a little technical, but it's really important to understand. Banks are able to borrow money very, very cheaply. So they basically are paying almost nothing for the money they borrow. And then they're lending that money out to us. And the rates they're lending the money out have come down quite a bit. I mean, mortgage rates.
But they're still high. For people that don't have perfect credit, they're like in the 6, 7, 8.
Right, exactly. So the margins, the profit margins for these banks have really widened quite a bit. And as a result, if they can just sort of keep steady on their old loans, they're making a lot of money on their new loans.
Hey, James, can you help me understand something?
Sure. Okay.
What does profitability mean for an industry that's in the middle of a $700 billion bailout from the taxpayers and another $1.5 trillion from the Fed? Is this profitability with an asterisk? What does this really mean?
Well, it's an open question. I mean, if you think about these particular banks, the big banks that we're talking about, so Wells, J.P. Morgan, you know, and so on, they have, you know, Wells I think has gotten basically $25 billion from the government. So, yeah, profitability with an asterisk. But I think the reality is that with big banks, when you are in a situation like we're in now, where interest rates are very low, as long as they can kind of stay in business, they are going to make quite a bit of money over time. And while it's profitability with an asterisk, the one thing to remember is every dollar these banks earn right now is for the most part a dollar that we are not going to have to put into them if we say we're to take them over.
But are we going to make any money on this deal? I mean, Goldman wants to put $5 billion, in equity markets to pay back the TARP. The Feds actually don't want that to happen because it makes the other banks look bad. But, hey, I'm a taxpayer out here. I'd love to get a little piece of that.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, Goldman, as you said, has to raise this money. They announced plans that they want to raise money from private shareholders in order to then pay it back. That was part of the deal when they took the TARP money in the fall, that was the only way they would be able to pay it back. But the government is hesitant to do that because they don't want some banks to look good and others to look bad.
Sounds like the government's listening on your phone, James.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I just wonder what that was. Yeah. But the thing I would say is that in terms of kind of the taxpayers' return, I don't expect that we're going to make back all of the money we put into these banks. I mean, as you know, it isn't just these banks. I mean, something like 400 or 350 banks have gotten some money. And I don't expect to get that all back. But I do think that if the banks return to some measure of health or profitability, that in the long run, we'll get a good chunk of that money back. And, you know, I mean, I was thinking about Citigroup. I mean, the government now owns something crazy like 35% of Citigroup, or will once everything's done. You know, Citigroup stock was up like 25% yesterday. So the government made like $1 billion on its investment in Citigroup yesterday. So,
they bought it a buck a share.
Yeah.
Right? They got it good.
Exactly. So we do have an interest in that sense, an economic interest, aside from the broader, you know, we want the banking system to be healthy. We do have some interest in these banks doing, you know, reasonably well.
So James Surowiecki, of course, he writes the balance sheet, the business columnist for The New Yorker. I mean, your column has always been, you know, well-read in The New Yorker, but you're actually speaking at the NYU Skirball Center on May 5th. I mean, this is a sold-out rock star event. Did you ever believe that would be possible?
Well, it's definitely something, you know, we had our first conference last year, and this will be the second one. And I think it is a reflection of the fact that, obviously, I mean, what can I say, in the last couple of years, this kind of subject has really become sort of essential, I think, to the way people are thinking about the world. And, you know, it's front page. I mean, it seems like every day the New York Times has some big business story on the front page. So I think things have really changed, you know, not really for the best, to be honest. But I think it is something that is basically on everybody's mind.
But because people are suddenly more knowledgeable about, like, the arcane sort of details of the banking industry, does that help us insulate us from the surprise and the sense of shock? Should things turn around in the next, you know, 2-3 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think the more interesting question is, you know, will we stay interested? And I do think that over the years, say over the last decade, the last 20 years, there's been more of that. People managing their own money, you know, all of this, you know, you're hoping people are getting more informed. I think that the important thing would be when this all ends, let's hope it does end, that, you know, people remain to some degree or another engaged and interested in what happens. Because, you know, it is very arcane, and it's very easy once we get into the questions of what we're going to be getting into, like how do we regulate the financial system, for people to just be like,
no,
yeah.
So the focus has to be long term. All right, James, very quickly, which bank is most important this week?
I think the most important bank is Citigroup because it's in worse shape.
We'll leave it there. James Surowiecki writes the blog, The Balance Sheet, business columnist for The New Yorker. Thanks so much, James.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.